Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of Triple Play. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And we just want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Brooks Bible College, for all they do. If you're considering a Bible college, a degree in Bible studies or counseling, they're getting ready to have a counseling forum here very shortly. And if you're a pastor considering maybe looking in a little more about counseling, you should check out the forum. But also don't forget to check them out. Their goal is to create people in the ministry, well-qualified, ready to preach, and also with not a lot of debt. Most people go to Bible college or go to a seminary, you're going to come out with lots of debt, and then it's hard to get into the ministry. Their goal is to get you guys engaged and engaged in the ministry of the Lord as quickly as possible with as little debt as possible. So consider Brooks Bible College, and you'll have all their information in the tag notes below the show notes. So with that said, I have a great guest today. We've been talking for a while, and it's so great to finally have you here today. We have Lydia with Focus. I'm going to say this right. Life Focus Media. I kept wanting to say Focus Media the other day. Life Focus Media. And how many Emmys have you guys gotten there?
Nominated for 15.
Wow.
1-5.
So there you go. Nominated for 15, 1-5. That is awesome. So you guys are doing some great work. I'm interested to hear a little bit about you. So tell us just a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in the St. Louis area?
I came here as a young adult to work for a child evangelism fellowship. And then after 10 years of working for CEF, I spent 16 years homeschooling my children. And my husband and I and two other couples started a Christian camp. And so we kind of did that on the side. And he's a residential builder and remodeler. And so helping him a little with the office work. And I've just kind of had a finger in a lot of different things. And then went back to CEF for 4 years. And then just a year ago, joined Life Focus. So I really can't take any credit for the Emmy nominations. That's all the founder, Mona Hinnine, but I am excited to join the team.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to learn a little bit about Life Focus because I started looking into it as we were getting this all set up, and I realized I'd actually seen some of the work you guys have done over the years. So, and I didn't realize, obviously, just like you don't pay attention to a lot of like who's the publisher, you just watch and enjoy the experience when you're watching it. So tell me a little bit about who is Life Focus Media. That's probably a good place to start for our listeners. Kind of who are they and what drew you into working with them and so.
Okay. So Life Focus Media is a media production company started a little over 20 years ago to produce faith-based TV series for PBS, which is, as you know, a secular network. But the series was real life stories of people who encountered very difficult life circumstances. And by the end of it, they explored faith in Jesus Christ. And it was a neat, the programs are really cool because when you started watching them, you didn't know that it was going to go there till about three quarters of the way in when you're really hooked, to see what happens. And so great evangelism tool, really.
So they started 20 years ago. Obviously they probably still do some of that stuff, but what else do they do now?
Well, that series aired on 170 stations, and it was viewed by 30 million people and as you said, won some Emmys. And since then, secular networks such as ABC, CBS, and PBS have aired some of the programming, and they've come to realize that there's an audience, even on a secular network, for faith-based programming. And so it was funny, I was in the car with Mona Hinnine in Chicago when a producer from PBS called her and said, "Why aren't you giving me more programming?" She's like, "I got to find sponsors, I'm not independently wealthy here. I've got to find a way to fund to make these programs because you're not giving me money for them, But they love them. They want them. And so she's trying to fill that desire so that people can see that sort of thing. But as time went on, Life Focus Media has been moving even more intentionally in the direction of trauma healing programming. So what I do with Life Focus is I'm director of partnerships. So I take care of our friends and our partners. I find ministries and networks who can use our resources so that they will get a broader audience. I do public awareness type things like this. So yeah, I'd love for your audience to check us out on lifefocus.tv.
Yeah. Well, what drew you into it? I mean, obviously you're working with CEF and that's a great ministry, a great cause as well. We were just talking earlier. Anybody watching this will already probably have had a chance to see Jeremy on where we talked a little bit about CEF. But what drew you into this particular role in this particular, almost want to call it ministry, even though it's not a ministry per se.
Yeah.
It kind of is because you guys are sharing the gospel just in a different platform, a different way.
Considers herself a media missionary. Yeah. And well, what drew me was I was at NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters, and she looked me up, and because I was with a children's ministry, I was just looking for partners, and because she had a vision for a program that would reach children for trauma healing. So as we began talking, I said, "Well, you know, CEF wouldn't touch this unless it had the gospel clearly in every episode." And she's like, "Well, there's not time for that." So I pull out my five-color hacky sack and I do the gospel in 60 seconds, you know. And she's like, "Yeah, yeah, we need that. We can do that. This is cool." And so I offered to just help her on the side with the scripts and incorporating gospel elements into the episodes. And I just thought it was intriguing and fun because this is something that will reach millions of children in the Middle East, actually, this particular series. And so I worked with her on the side for a couple of years. And then as I had a desire to work more part-time, have more time to be grandma, and just have more flexibility in life in general, I decided to move on over. And I'm just drawn to learning more about trauma healing. I started taking some classes and learning more about the whole topic myself. So this kind of gives me a way to learn about it while working with it. And it's just been one of those steps in life as you see yourself kind of, this is the next step I need to do for me personally. And, you know, God provided and led and
sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like a really cool thing. I want to get into the trauma healing, but before we do that, obviously you're working with Mona now and you've seen this work that she's done for 2 years. What really, I mean, there's gotta be a relationship there that you just find special, right? I mean, people like that remind me of like my pastor or, you know, when you work side by side with somebody doing something you're passionate about, something that's got a religious overtone about, and you're able to do that, you build these great bonds. So if I had to ask you, how would you explain Mona and how does that relationship come together? Cause you're like, it seems like with this position, you're like her right-hand person. So.
Well, she and I are opposites. It's really cool. She's very creative and, just a genius when it comes to producing a riveting program. She can really tell a story. And, on the other hand, I'm very organized and, you know, kind of, anyway, we need each other. And so, or, you know, she needs me for the skills that I bring. And yet, even our personalities, you know, if you've taken the Myers-Briggs, we're the exact opposites. The traumas in our life have been exact opposites. I mean, even how we were forced to eat eggs in our childhood is the exact opposite. She was traumatized by being forced to eat runny eggs, and I was traumatized by being forced to eat very dry eggs. And so we laugh about these things, but it's fun to, it's just a living example of how God makes the body of Christ, different parts of the body, and we need each other and we need to, learn to understand and work well together and cooperate and appreciate the giftings, the opposite giftings that God's made. It's shown me, convinced me even more how that God just loves unity in diversity. She is Egyptian born, and her father was a missionary from Egypt to the Sudan. So she was there as a child, and then they immigrated to Chicago because of a war in Sudan. and became naturalized citizens and just love the United States. And she went to Wheaton Bible College and got a degree in journalism or broadcasting, but has held a lot of different positions and then went on her, off on her own to be a media missionary. And so she's an amazing person, and it's my privilege to support her and to help her to realize the vision that, God has given her.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that. That is really, really cool. And so that relationship then moves into, she comes to you and with a very, it sounds like a very specific topic of, you know, this trauma healing. Tell us a little bit, what is trauma healing? And then how do you guys incorporate that into these episodes that are going to be able to reach people? Because that's your new series, right? That you guys are working on right now. So
yes, it's one of them. So I think we should probably define trauma. It's probably a word that's being used, a little overused now, as I was talking about being traumatized by eggs, you know?
Right, right.
I was joking, of course. But trauma is a very serious thing. It's an unexpected loss or suffering that's beyond one's control. So it has a huge impact on the mind and emotions that is overwhelming and causes suffering, and people can suffer because of it for many years or for a lifetime. It has no boundaries. It affects people of every age, race, social level, economic level, both genders, you know, everyone. And then just as some examples, I have a list here of some of the ways it can happen as a result of natural disaster, childhood neglect or abuse of all kinds, bullying, ongoing bullying, divorce, discrimination, physical assault, sexual assault, poverty, war, loss of a loved one from death or a myriad of reasons of, for separation, serious car accident or other kind of accident, various crimes. But, you know, you get the idea. There's just so many different types of very painful losses, and people need to recognize that these things do affect the mind and the emotions, and not try to just, you know, power through it and move on, that there needs to be healing from those sorts of things.
Gotcha. Now, when you talk healing to me, you know, I would imagine is a process. So not something that happens instantaneous. So as you guys are working through this with people, are you seeing that it's a long process of healing? Is that what you're, you know?
Right. And helping people to understand the process. There's something called the Healing Arc, ARC.
Okay.
It's been around for decades, scientifically studied and proven as a necessary process for healing. So the A stands for acknowledgement. That would be truth telling, being able to say what happened. The R is redress, and the C is closure. And as you know, all truth is God's truth. So ARC, you know, doesn't come directly from the Bible, but it is very biblical, each one of the steps. So is it okay if I go through each of those?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you just explained that it sounds like, and you were saying your exact opposites with your Egyptian friend, Mona, that Mona probably has some pretty dramatic things. I mean, being able to have to be whisked out of Sudan to here, to go from Egypt to Sudan. I mean, not that those are necessarily traumatic events, but they kind of are, especially if you're young. Yeah. So
displacement from war is huge. I mean, especially to a child, everything suddenly changes. Different culture, living in different, you know, more than one culture has its difficulties. Yeah, it's funny. You know, when I talk about some of the things that have been traumatic to me, she just looks at me and says, I see your mouth moving. I hear you saying wah, 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 but it's not registering. I cannot even imagine living through something like that or experiencing that. I have absolutely no concept, you know? And so we do have such different experiences that we need these steps to, you know, to be aware of them for each other.
Yeah, it sounds like they can, you know, when you're mentioning all the things of trauma, that they come from different angles too. I mean, you've got something like a sudden loss, okay, to a traumatic childhood, to, you know, maybe a traumatic event that could be a, you know, a war, could be a car accident, but traumatic events. And I just think, you know, that is a, that's a wide spectrum that probably fits a lot more people than we realize. You know, I used to always say, and I heard this from a pastor that used to say the person next to you probably has more hurts, heartaches, and distrust than anybody you'll ever meet. And, you know, you just don't even know it, you know, and that's, I find it to be true. Like, if we just sit down and talk to people, you find out, man, that's a, that is, most people have had some kind of traumatic event, not all, but a lot of people have.
Right. And may not even recognize it themselves. So that's why acknowledgement is so important. The person needs to recognize that what happened was traumatic and needs to be able to express it to a sympathetic listener, needs to be able to verbalize it, speak truth, and not feel like they need to hold back. So not being heard, being dismissed or downplayed, oh, that wasn't really so bad, or intimidated into silence, that can actually be a secondary trauma. And, you know, it's been said that, excuse me, it's been said that the trauma itself is bad enough, but the lack of an empathetic audience to validate the suffering and to share the grief is worse yet for some things. To just be alone in that and to not feel understood or heard or, you know, can actually exacerbate the pain. Mm. And the Bible demonstrates acknowledgement with a lot of laments. Around 40% of the Psalms are laments. Mm. I did not realize it was such a high percentage. So, you know, God doesn't say, hey, quit whining, you know?
Well, the whole book of Lamentations, right? So we got a whole book of lament.
Right. It's, they're all throughout the scripture, but especially the Psalms, you know, David and others just, you know, we'd say they're kind of complaining, whining, and saying some very ungodly things, you know, but it's a lament. And, you know, we were created to be in community, starting with one other person, a spouse, and then family, and then a smaller community, you know, like a church family, and then a broader community. And we need to be seen and heard by at least one other significant person in our life. And then, you know, more is even better. The more a person tells their story, the more they can process it. It's been shown that, you know, a person can think about it, but writing it out is helpful, but actually expressing it to another person, having them look you in the eye, nod their head, encourage you to keep talking and not shut you down, you know, that actually helps get it out there and helps the person process it. So it's very important to encourage people to talk. And, you know, many people are actually kept from knowing Christ because they are so beat down. And I'm sure you've heard this. We need to meet people where they are and acknowledge their pain and loss and show examples in the Bible, tell them how God sees them and loves them, you know, before we can jump to asking them to repent of their sins and, you know, follow Jesus and all this. It's, you know, we get the cart before the horse sometimes when they're not really ready.
Kind of like where it says to be slow to speak and quick to listen.
Right.
You know, and feed my people, you know, like some key concepts from scripture that, as you said, that I just was thinking in my head. I mean, these are, as you said, they're biblical terms. Mm-hmm. I'd also just got done listening to a podcast in the past 24 hours with two of the world's leading psychologists of Jordan Peterson and Dr. Phil. Mm-hmm. And in their 2-hour conversation, one of the key things that they clued in on is the lack of love, a listening ear, has led to a lot of people's demises in our society. So, you know, again,
loneliness. Probably my favorite example in the Bible is Hagar and the way God provided for her and Ishmael when they're out in the desert. And he came to her, he encouraged her. I mean, how many people have had an appearance? You know, yet she got to see, to meet some form of, I don't know, Jesus or God or somebody. But he made promises to her, encouraged her, and then told her to go back and submit to Sarah. But Hagar called him the God who sees me. And, you know, I was just thinking about this the other day, how we talk about being the hands and feet of Jesus as we serve others. And it just occurred to me, when we see another person in their pain, we can be the eyes of Jesus. And then they can believe that God cares and that God came to them, even if it's through us, you know.
And be encouraged.
Yeah. And be encouraged to come. So then, you know, after the acknowledgement, after being able to talk. Yeah. So the next step is redress or remedy. And people need to know you are not alone. God loves you and has a plan. And God's people care and will do what they can to bring justice, either for past wrongs or current wrongful situations. And in fact, God commands his people all through the Bible to be people of justice. One example is Jeremiah 21:12. This is what the Lord says to you, house of David: administer justice every morning, rescue from the hand of the oppressor, the one who has been robbed, or my wrath will break out and burn like fire. So yeah, this one is hard because there's a lot of ideas out there about justice today. And some people who feel like others are going overboard and can feel reactionary against the whole concept and throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm certainly not in agreement with everything that, you know, comes under the banner of justice. But there is a type of biblical justice. And the more you study it, the more you see it. And for people, once they're heard, if someone says, oh, that's terrible, and, you know, what's happening to you, but then they walk away and they don't try to help, that doesn't really mean much, does it? You know, so
I always have thought of it as kind of this, that when you read, especially if you read the book of John or any of the writings of John, John uses the word love a lot. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that he also uses the word truth. Yeah. And so love, it seems like he's always saying you got to love with the Lord's love, but it always has to be anchored in truth. And justice is the rope that ties those two together. It's the balance of those two. We love people with truth, but we do it through justice, right? So we want to give people a listening ear. That's just. Mm-hmm. We want to see people have opportunities. That's just. And we want to always do it in love, but love should always be anchored through justice and truth.
That's really good. Interesting. So the third, the C, is closure. And I like to think of this as putting yourself in God's hands. Romans 8:28 is a verse that people take out of context a lot. You know, like they'll say, all things work together for good, and they'll just stop right there. And you're like, actually, all things don't always work to, you know, and become better and, you know, show good from that. It's sometimes things get worse and worse.
Well, I think about like scripture where it says, take up your cross and follow me. That's not a good thing. Or, you know, you'll experience more hardship than me type of verses. You know, you're going to be if they did this to me, what will they do to you? You know, verses.
And the full verse says, for those who love God and for those who are called according to his purpose, then God works those things out for good. And so this verse is not for everyone. It's for us, God's people. And it's all about loving God and wanting to see his ultimate purpose fulfilled with an eternal benefits. So, yeah, I think what we need to do is hold our trauma out to him and say, God, I love you. I trust you. I'm handing this to you to work something good from it. And I will cooperate with you. And then rejoice in what comes of your good work. And so that cooperation could take a lot of different forms. It could take, it's going to be different for each of us. We need to work this out with the Lord. What does he want us to do in a situation? There's forgiveness in a way that doesn't perpetuate wrongdoing. There's praying for and blessing those who mistreat us. There's careful forms of rebuke and discipline for believers, especially those who consider themselves leaders in the church. When they sin, they need to be called out, as explained in Ephesians 5 and other passages, so the church can be purified. But, you know, once we explore these possible ways of cooperation with God, then we can stand back and see how God uses everything for a cascade of good results that have eternal benefits. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we need to be free to explore that in tangible ways. And that can be a lifetime journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you walk through these steps, how does that, I guess, are there trauma healing ministries out there? And as you're saying these, is there specifically those that are tied maybe to children as well? Because I'm just thinking, it seems like as we're talking about this, I mean, obviously people have trauma at all ages, but you start out saying this, I have a passion for children. So
yeah.
Is there ministries that already do this type of work to help people through this process of ARC?
Yeah, there is. The development of trauma healing as a Christian ministry is an interesting story. There was this missionary woman, Harriet Hill, who was a Bible translator. And after translating the Bible for a language spoken in the Ivory Coast and providing copies of the Bible.
Was it with an organization like Wycliffe?
It was either Wycliffe or SIL.
Okay.
But she comes back later to these villages and finds that many of the Bibles were unused. And so she's asking why, and she finds out that many of the people suffered from trauma, and as a result, they're unlikely to open the Bible. I mean, it didn't seem plausible to them that God cares for them.
Yeah, it's saying like, here, God cares for you, out the door, you know, like, yeah.
Right, read this from God. What is God to me, you know?
Yeah.
So she asks the question, what does the Bible say about trauma? And the answer is actually quite a lot. So she began to study this. She and some other missionaries, one was an educator, another was a counselor, another was a psychiatrist. The four of them, they're all from either Wycliffe or SIL. But they wrote a book published in 2004 called Healing the Wounds of Trauma, How the Church Can Help. The American Bible Society saw value in the book and published it. In fact, I've got a copy of it.
So there it is, Healing the Wounds of Trauma. Okay.
It's a small book. It's 140 pages at most with everything in it. But it's a gem. And because they were all missionaries to Africa, all of the examples are African. But, you know, you can make application.
Sure. I mean,
so
that even though she was looking at the specific area that she came from, that was her, but she also had three other people that are part of that book too. And right. So they're kind of balancing that out. So yeah, I imagine that would be very, I mean, we're talking about it. It's applicable to everybody in some way.
Yeah. So the founder of Life Focus, Mona Hanein, became friends with Harriet, and they decided to put the principles in this book to the test in a documentary of real people going through this process. So they chose what I think must be the most miserable place in the earth, the Congo, where they had been in civil war for around 40 years, and the people had just suffered horrible, horrible traumas. So they went and put on this biblical trauma healing small group clinic in a church and documented the people going through the clinic. And the documentary was aired on ABC in 2013 and received an Emmy nomination.
That's awesome.
And basically, trauma healing as a ministry was born. And it went into 13 languages and 8 countries in Africa, generating 50,000 responses per quarter of people calling in wanting help and to learn more about the Bible. And so American Bible Society began to try to develop this more. Mona did another series directed to the persecuted church in Iran, which that was quite the project, still yielding fruit, whole story in itself. But this trauma healing process with biblical small group discussions was adopted by American Bible Society and used worldwide. And they published a curriculum for small groups and churches. And Life Focus is licensed to use the process in our programs. And there's now a wave of demand for more trauma healing across the globe. So we're well positioned to help meet that demand with a biblical response. Now, you know, everybody's talking about trauma and trauma healing, and some of them are not, that are jumping on the bandwagon, are not biblical in the response. And so I would really love to see Life Focus have more of an influence in that conversation.
That's awesome. And so this is what you've got a new series built around, correct? Right now that's getting ready, like I guess you guys are working on at the moment.
Yeah. So I can tell you about three projects.
Okay.
One is for children, the one that I first started helping with. One is for women, and then I can tell you about a project for men, which I think your sports audience will like.
So. I think I saw a little bit of that. I saw a friend of mine who's a pastor here in St. Louis, but played for the Mets, was on it. Okay. So, guy named Daryl Strawberry.
Yes. That's what I have in mind.
Yeah. There was. I looked through on the site some of these new series that are coming through, and I mean, they look fantastic. Mm-hmm. And they really do.
Yeah.
The work done on them, the trailers that, you know, several of them had trailers. So I was just kind of glancing. And but tell us a little bit about the children's one, and we'll focus on, I guess, the women, and then hit it off with some men stuff.
Okay. So the children's one is a 13-episode series in the Middle East for Arab children who've suffered poverty, abuse, and multiple losses. It's called Lekida, which means basically, why is life like this?
Mm.
What's up with life being like this? It's been airing via satellite, YouTube, and social media into the 21 countries of MENA. That's the Middle East and North Africa. And each half-hour episode is being viewed around 50,000 times a month on the
satellite. So those are already out right now.
Right. And it's been out on Sat7 platforms. And so we're encouraged that it's getting so many views on with just the one distributor. And this year, we're adding other networks and ministries so that the reach will be greater. So that's part of my job, communicating with people around the world and asking if they'd like to use these videos, because, you know, now that we've put all this work into them and they're done, we'd really like to see them used to maximum capacity.
Mm. So when we're discussing this arc, is it important to keep the steps in order, the A, R, and C?
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of times, we, as the listener, we want to jump straight to the closure step. You know, we don't want to see this person suffering, so we want to skip the first two steps, but it's just not healthy. The person will have to circle back eventually. And this was really important for me to learn. I've always wanted to fix people or fix their problems, so have been really too quick with the whole, well, God will work this out for good, you know, answer, or the, well, at least it wasn't, you know, answer, like, look at the bright side, could have been worse, you know. But those are very unhelpful responses, and there's a lot to learn about how to be a safe listener and an encouraging listener. And so I have been trying to make this for the last decade something that I am focused on learning, and so I'm still practicing, still failing. And a lot of times after I talk to someone, I'll think back over the conversation and I'll think, could I have listened better? Could I have held my tongue a little longer? And the answer is always yes. I'm doing better, but I'm still failing. But I have experienced where when we encourage people to talk, eventually, with enough space and encouragement, they will come around to the right conclusion, you know, to those theological answers or whatever themselves. And if they do that, it's a lot more meaningful and will stick with them better than, you know, if I gave them that platitude in the first 5 minutes, you know. It's been very interesting to see that that's true. If I can be patient with people, that it's really important to take those steps in the right order. And when we deny a person the laments that they need to make, perhaps they even need to make them for a lifetime, we are short-circuiting something in their healing. And when we deny justice, you know, telling people to just, you know, take the mistreatment and be quiet, you know, this, you should just be patient or whatever, we aren't really reflecting the heart of God for people as shown throughout the Bible. That's, there might be a time, you know, to be meek and to not fight for our own rights, definitely. But that needs to be weighed carefully in the broad picture. God might want to use you as an instrument to call out sin for long-term good. Or God might want to use you to show people that he cares about them by you advocating for them, or to be his hands and feet to a hurting world by relieving suffering of all kinds, like emotional suffering, not just physical suffering. So, yeah, taking those steps in the right order takes patience and understanding, and it's something that all of us need to learn.
We can all listen a little bit better.
Right.
I'll listen a little bit better. When you were saying that, it kind of reminded me of when you're dealing with somebody who's going through grief. Mm-hmm. You know, say they've lost a loved one. You never want to tell them just to get over it. You know, it's happened. It's done. Move on. You know, there's a process through the grief process that has to be, you have to walk through, you know, and if you don't, it'll come back and haunt you. It just does. You know, it just does. There's a process of grief, and there's a process to dealing with a traumatic event in your life that's helped define you.
Yeah, and all trauma is a loss of some kind, there needs to be a grieving for that loss, whatever it is. And sometimes we don't realize that. We think, you know, when someone dies, it's obvious there's a tremendous loss there, and so we have a little more, perhaps, sympathy or patience for people going through that loss. And we can still be impatient, but some of the other traumas we might not have as much patience for.
You think about trauma and you think about death in the Bible, and Jesus wept. You know, like there was real mourning there and real emotion there. And he didn't need a lot. He didn't say a lot. He just wept. And I think sometimes, you know, we're dealing with whether it be the healing or grieving of somebody, you know, the listening ear can never be overrated, and letting them work through the emotions of it. I think also when you allow that to happen, you start to understand a lot more of who they are. Because traumatic events or loss in our life, whether we admit it or not, it helps to create and define a little bit of who we are. Doesn't have to fully. You know, you can have an abusive father, but then chances are that may not define you as an abuser, but you may be on the other side as somebody who literally goes complete opposite and doesn't even discipline your own kids. And so, you know, it can define your choices of different things, you know. And so I think it's important. Sometimes we try to be quick to judge people, quick to, you know, box people in, and we don't take the time to listen to who they are, their hurts, their needs, what's caused these decisions to come into place, and then meet them right there. I think, you know, if you can do that, even if you don't agree with the outcome of everything, at least you'll have an appreciation of why they are who they are, or what's created them to be who they are. And I think that's important.
Absolutely. And what you were saying there at the beginning reminded me of the verse that where the Bible tells us to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. He doesn't say if someone's weeping, rush in and wipe away their tears and, you know, cheer them up.
Slap them on the butt, say, get back in the game, right?
Well, and especially for complex trauma. This is trauma that has, where you've had multiple things pile on top of one another, and or perhaps something that goes on for a really long length of time. Closure can take much longer. It can take a lifetime. These people will be having new discoveries or have new levels of understanding about areas of hurt that weren't recognized in the past. I know I have experienced this where I was like, oh, I'm finally beginning to understand. You know, I'm working on a genogram right now for one of my classes. And so I saw this pattern throughout from my grandparents on one side of my family, my grandparents, my father, myself. And I was like, oh, the first time I saw it like this. And it gave me some things to process, you know? And so these things need to be processed and lamented and redressed if possible. And then finally closure realized. And, you know, that redressing and the closure can overlap sometimes, helping each other, even though they're distinctly different. every situation has its unique aspects of how people need to deal with it. But it's not for me to judge, oh, you should be over this, or you should be over that thing by now. Maybe there's something they're just coming to grips with, or the loss is much greater than I understand because my experience didn't include that loss, or if it did, I didn't have as high of a value for that thing that they lost as they did. There's just so many reasons why we can't step into their situation and think that we have a good picture of what's happening there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the next project I want to tell you about is called No More Shame. It's a series for women. And while we were filming it in Egypt, while we were filming Laikida in Egypt, the Pioneers Mission Agency, which you might be familiar with, there's a pretty big Pioneers, pretty big mission agency. They saw what was being done and they requested that we do a series for Arab women. So last summer, we did a focus group with Arab women who are leaders of various agencies and ministries for women and came up with a list of 14 traumas. And each episode of this 14-episode series addresses a particular trauma. So that's the second project
working on. So the children and the women one are dealt with Middle Eastern, Arabic-type countries. Was that on purpose? Was Mona really trying? I mean, I imagine they're going being a missionary from Egypt to Sudan. Still hasn't left her to some degree, and so she probably has a lot of
contacts still in Egypt and in the Middle East. But the Arabic focus, it's how God has led. I mean, she has plenty of contacts here in the U.S. too, but I think that God has had his hand on her life so that she is multicultural and has, I mean, she can do things in the Middle East that no other American, you know, producer really could do without those connections. But, you know, you can't produce anything without funding. And we had this highly respected ministry ask for the project and offer half of the funding.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that's God's leading, definitely. Secondly, I feel good about, you know, really focusing on Arabs because it's a part of the world and a people group who really do not have the opportunities that Western people have to hear the gospel. And so I think that's important that we prioritize people with less opportunity.
I know this is exploding. The gospel is exploding in Iran, Afghanistan, even though the regimes have moved back in and things like that. That underlying principle of the gospel is still thriving and growing in those areas.
Right. And so that was my third point is God's moving there. And, you know, when you see God moving, you want to cooperate with what God's doing. And, you know, I heard that interview with Francois Boshoff when he was talking about the supernatural visions and conversions among Muslims, and it's true. And so people are open with the internet and social media. They're able, and satellite, you know, it used to be that when everything's, you know, cable and that sort of thing, people had to be careful about what they watched because they'd get caught. But now that we can, you know, get programming into these countries through other means and people are hungry for it. It's an amazing opportunity. Mm. And, you know, I talk to people who are afraid of Muslims and they'd rather help American children. And, you know, I get that. But, you know, as we think of the safety and well-being of our own children, think about this. I imagine an America that could send a lot fewer bombs to the Middle East if we sent more missionary resources. And imagine in America that when Arab refugees come here to our doorstep, we befriend and disciple them. And then they share resources with their friends and family all over the world. So that's my vision, is that, you know, we cooperate with what God's doing and have a heart for the world. And Oasis International here in St. Louis. Have you interviewed them?
Oh.
They're one of those Christian welcoming influences. Your family can get paired up with a refugee family. And
oh, wow. I'll have to look into that. I'd love to. If you have a contact there, hook me up. I'd love to. I love finding out about great resources and helping get the word out about places like that. I mean, we
want up with them when they first arrive is critical, because after a year or 2 years, they're kind of settled. They've found their own community. There's less of an opportunity to have an influence. But yeah, I really think that It's a great opportunity for these episodes to be in Arabic. And I mean, I would like to see them in every language, you know, because it's so needed and it's such an opportunity for the gospel. I mean, because, you know, when people see something that speaks to their heart or to their heart wounds, they're going to click on it and they're going to watch it over and over. And so we do work the gospel into the program. So it's not just a complete soft introduction. It's, but it's definitely a gentle door opener.
Well, it sounds to me like we've got a lot of churches in America. We got access to a great resource that you just mentioned. Churches could be meeting that gap of the children over here, just through their own children's ministries and the people that are available through their own church, teaming up with, sounds like, this oasis to find these refugees, and using media resources to reach out to other countries just seems like a no-brainer to me. I mean,
yeah.
And so
it's hard for me. I'm one person. I can't contact every church that might have a heart for this. So what I'm trying to do is find organizations or networks that can use the programs and hope that those churches will, you know, also work with those ministries and networks. And so, yeah, that's my quest. And so a lot of research going on and a lot of phone calls. And
but if you've done camps and you've homeschooled, sounds like you're up to the task. So it does. Oh, those are exactly
like interesting for sure.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, when you said that, I mean, when we started this conversation, you told me just those two facts, you know, I've got a wife, got six kids. I know, you know, during COVID, we basically homeschooled for 2.5 years. It's a lot to do. And when you are trying to do that, now you're a grandma. So, I mean, those are all worthy things and noble things, and be able to still take your other time and invest it in something like this. You know, I always tell people there's lots of great things I can invest my time in, but I want to put my time and effort into those things that bring a lot more value and eternal value. You know, I can sleep when I die. I tell people, people are like, you don't sleep enough. I'm like, I'll sleep when I die. I'll have plenty of time then.
I know. You know, I used to say sleep is overrated, but now, you know, I'm kind of recognizing the value of that. You know, your emotional, physical health is important.
Well, I'm not saying I'm up for an overnighter, but I am saying that, you know, like I just find myself trying to invest things like when I would spend more time in, unless I'm doing spending a video time where I'm investing time with my kids and having fun. And so I'll do some online stuff with them. But otherwise, I don't find myself, you know, I look back 20, 30 years ago when I would have extra time and I would just do nothing. Now it's like, if I got extra time, I want to invest it. I want to invest it in my marriage. I want to invest it in lost people. I want to invest it in
things,
you know,
that really matter.
Yeah, things that have an eternal value or a present value in family. And so when I'm thinking about you, you could probably do anything. You had a job at CEF. That's a great job. But this is something that really, as you helped out Mona over those couple of years, really triggered your heart as you studied this trauma. Yeah, that was maybe the string that pulled you in, and now you're seeing the fruits of that. And so we have the men's. You were talking about the men's programming. I actually thought that some of that was pretty fun. I was looking at your guests, and there were, as you said, lots of great athletes and other people, though. There were some good options there of different people. I saw, when I first looked, if I remember right, I saw Pastor Warren, him and his wife, who lost a son to suicide. I saw, obviously, Jill Strawberry, great athlete, but very much went through trauma and met his wife in the rehab. There was a couple, I think, a football player. I mean, these are great, and they all come from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different cultures that they were all brought up in, and yet affected by these events. I think it goes to show that men aren't exempt from facing some trauma. We call PTSD sometimes, but sometimes PTSD is just a big blanket term. A lot of times there's real trauma there beyond the PTSD, and they really need more of a
it's the T and the PTSD. Yeah,
they need some more time for people to listen and
process things that happened. And so the episodes that you're talking about with these various people, it's called Twist of Faith. And it's a cute play on words there that Mona came up with. But those episodes have been fully filmed. And as you can see, we have trailers. And a few of the episodes have been fully edited and finished. But we have 10 or so left to be edited so that we can then air it as a full series on PBS or some of the other networks that would be interested. So we're looking for sponsors to finish that project, and then we can show them. And yeah, so one of the episodes you would especially like is the one about Daryl Strawberry. And here's trauma that men can relate to. Daryl tells about how his father used to whip him and his siblings with a vacuum cord just incessantly, and many other abuses, to the point that Daryl just wanted to kill his father. And he just never heard a kind word, and desperately, like any young man, wants his father's affirmation. And he tells how when the crowd went wild for him during the World Series, he felt nothing. He was so empty. It meant nothing to him. And that's what trauma does to a person. And that's life without God's love and affirmation. So yeah, he's got a great testimony, and we'd love to show it to the world, but we need a sponsor.
Well, so if people want to do that, what's the best way that people can jump on board, whether they want to be a sponsor, whether they want to just help get the word out? Is it going to the website?
Yeah, so you can go to the website and go to the donation page, and there's a drop down there where you can give toward the children's series, getting it out to more networks. All that takes a lot of logistics and expense. You know, you would think that these ministries, when we call them up and say, hey, would you like to use this resource? And they're like, yes, we sure would. You know, it'd be great if we could say, well, give us some money and we'll give you, you know, but that doesn't work that way. They're a ministry too. Their resources are going toward the distribution, so we need sponsors to help us, you know, with all that. But you can give toward getting the children's episodes out. You can give toward the women's trauma healing. And these will eventually go into all the nations. You know, there's Arab people in every country. Or you can give towards Twist of Faith. If you are able to give large enough, let's say you have a business, and you can have advertising space on PBS. So there's different options of, you know,
how. So they can, yeah, depending on how much they're able to help out, individuals can give, sponsors, as you said. I mean, when I think of sponsors, I'm thinking usually companies that are able to mm-hmm. buy advertising space are welcome. And those anonymous gifts, maybe there's people out there who are listening to this episode. God is tugging at their heart. They're just like, I just want to help. I have the ability to do that. I just want to write a check and take care of one of those episodes. You know, do it. Go on there. We'll put the links on there'll be watchers watching this. We'll put the link to the website going across it there in our episode. But then we'll also put the link for the giving in the show notes, so that way they can just conveniently click on that, whether it's the audio or video episode that we're recording right now and they're listening or watching. Yeah, we'll make sure they can get to that conveniently. So,
well, I can tell you that this is really an extremely efficient way to reach people. I think I've figured that every, $15, I think it is, will reach some 900 people. I mean, that's the amazing magic of media, you know, that you can reach a lot of people with a few dollars. And Life Focus is very careful with the money. We joke and tease each other about being not cheap, frugal, you know, but Mona does make sure that she puts out a beautiful product, you know, so we're not cutting corners where it matters, where it's going to.
You mean they give out 15 Emmy nominations to junk? I mean, I'm just, right. I mean, you just start out with that. I would imagine that she's got, I mean, what I can tell from the trailers.
Yeah.
I just challenge
people. Somebody's living large. I'll just tell you that.
Very rarely in ministries do they. So I tell you what, if you're listening, check out, go to their website, check out the teaser trailers to some of these things. You'll see the quality there. Yeah. Hopefully if you're reading and going through the website, you'll hear the heart of Mona and who she is and what she wants to do. Maybe we'll get her on here one of these days when she's in town. But that said, you know, this has been very informative. And so going forward, is she going to stay focused on this traumatic healing with her? Is that really her focus at the moment?
We really feel like that trauma healing is an important way to reach people. It's an important need. Here we are in the age where social media was supposed to bring us together, but instead people are more lonely than ever. People don't understand how to communicate well. So we really feel like God has given us this niche, and this is where we want to intentionally focus.
How did you come to know the Lord? Just curious, because you said I came up and worked with CEF at a young age. You know, how did you come to know the Lord?
I was born into a pastor's family and was saved at age 7. So I still remember the prayer. I remember giving my heart to Jesus and telling God I would do anything that he wanted me to do with my life. And going to my father and telling him that I had prayed that prayer, and he said, well, you should be baptized. And so I remember getting baptized, and you know, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, I came to Christ early in life and feel like he had his hand on me in special ways. I also had some difficult things happen that helped me understand long-term trauma.
Well, I was going to ask you, your husband, did you meet him here, or did you meet him where you grew up?
I met him here because I moved to this area.
I assume that,
yeah. And I was attending a local church and met him, yes. And, you know, speaking of my husband, I want to give a shout out to him because through his hard work, I mean, you said a few minutes ago you could do anything. And I'm like, the reason I could do anything is because my husband, you know, supported me. And, you know, so
I was assuming that. I was going to ask about that. He had to be a very patient person and an understanding person, and obviously Phil's called the ministry just in his own way, right? I mean, because he's allowing you to be able to do all this work.
Well, and he's a hard worker. I mean, so his hard work in the construction business supported our family, so I had the freedom. You know, a lot of times families feel like they need both parents working and so on, but I did not have to. I mean, we made that choice early on to be a one-parent worker, you know, in the family.
Yeah.
And I think God did bless it. When we dropped my income, his doubled. I think that was God, but I still give credit to him for working really hard.
Absolutely. So he does rehabbing and construction. Does he have his own company?
He does. Yeah. Kaiser Construction.
Kaiser Construction. Does he have a website?
We don't really need one.
Okay.
Actually,
does he have a work number?
He does.
Okay. We'll put a work number and we'll put the name on this link as well. So
all the work he needs. Yeah, God's provided.
Okay.
So, but I mean, yeah, and it's close to home, and so yeah, we don't really want to run all over the countryside with different jobs, but yeah, I just want to give credit to God for providing for us for so well, and for him being my husband, being faithful to work hard, and yeah, it's a good testimony.
That's awesome. So dealing with the women's series that you guys are working on, You said there were several different types that you guys, each episode is dealing with a different type.
Right.
So tell us about that.
So, yeah, we did this focus group to identify 14 traumas and kind of prioritize them. Now, I'm going to ask you to step outside of your comfort zone or your box here and think for an Arab woman, what do you think might be the greatest trauma in her life?
Well, I would say security.
Okay.
Security would be one. My children would be another. Security could go a few different ways, but one of them would be, you know, knowing that we're provided for, provision, you know, financial or food. When you think, and of course, it also depends, are we talking somebody who's in the cities or outskirts, you know, because you got to define from there. Those would probably be my top three I think of.
Yeah. Well, you did well. The poverty was number two. Now, number one was a surprise to me. I thought that domestic violence would be number one, but it was actually number three. Number one was isolation in marriage.
Oh, I can definitely see that.
They would talk about how it feels like I'm only here to provide cooking, cleaning, and babies, you know, provide offspring. And he doesn't talk to me, doesn't recognize me, doesn't see me. You know, she's very lonely, and, you know, which can...
No conversational intimacy, and women desire that.
Right. And there's definitely no equality in the relationship and respect. So that isolation, because we are made for community, that's just extremely painful. The number one pain out of all the horrible things that they deal with. And domestic violence is very rampant. But again, it's... To me, this is really sick, but sometimes they feel like, well, if he hits me, at least he sees me. You know, he's paying attention to me. That's actually a good thing. It's just sometimes we just are not able to, you know, relate to others in their situation of what their traumas might be. Some of the other ones... that were high up, shame and guilt, shame just for growing up female in the home, because females are so much lesser that it just puts this blanket of shame on their life.
You saw that in Chinese society for a long time, because they would, you know, abandon young girls because the only way to pass your name on is males. But now they're becoming more and more highly esteemed because there's not enough females with all these males. It's interesting.
Become high in demand. Yes. Then there's female genital mutilation, still happening with 80% of the females over there. So that's, I can't just imagine how horrible that is. War and natural disaster. There's just, getting displaced from your home. Because of war, a lot of sexually related things like rape and incest and early marriage for the girls.
Yeah, that'd be very traumatic.
Yeah, for the mothers too. They're seeing their daughter taken.
Yeah.
Women have secret addictions in the home because of trying to cope. The shame of infertility, the pressure to be married and to have children. Adultery and betrayal, knowing that their husbands are not faithful, but it doesn't matter. And here's one that we can relate, we women can relate to probably in every culture, beauty standards. That's always a big one for us. It's interesting to hear from others about what their traumas are.
Well, And then knowing these hopefully prepares us better for when we are reaching these people groups and we are going in, that we can provide opportunities for those changes to occur. I remember Albert Pujols talking one time about when they first launched his organization, and they went to the Beatties, and I guess they'd been going a little while. And he decided, you know, God had really laid on his heart to build a baseball stadium. He didn't know why. Obviously a baseball player, but he just felt led to open up this baseball stadium in this Beatty. At the time, 98% of the people in the village were women. Basically, the men all worked in the city, had babies out there, and then would abandon them. They might send some money every now and then, usually if they wanted them for anything else, you know, sexual again, right? So a lot of these women were basically abandoned with kids. And when he built the stadium, the men started coming back to watch their sons play baseball. It gave them something to do other than stay in the city. And so... It like the community started to
families together.
Yeah, you started to see a different. And then the next thing was, I remember, is that Didi at that time had been invested in really trying to create opportunities for these women to make income, and so she created an opportunity to train them to use sewing, and would sell those goods online, and that way they could create income outside of just the Dominica, but all over the world. And of course, our organization helped facilitate that. So my point of that is, you know, you take something like that in just such a small place that's close to the United States as Dominica. But I think when you're mentioning these things in these war-torn Middle Eastern countries, if we know what the problems are, maybe we can be creative again, Auburn had no idea what a baseball stadium was going to do, but something like that could transform a community. Maybe we can be creative one day and come up with something that would bring these men back and value their wives with the value that God sees them in. And their families. And so we just got to be creative. I think one of the great things about being who we are is that God's given us the ability to do that.
Yes. And it goes for people in our church, people next door in the house right next door to us. Do we know what are the particular dynamics in that place that are causing pain? And are we willing to listen and be vulnerable to share our own, so that with safe people, so that we can experience healing ourselves.
Hmm. Well, this sounds like an incredible ministry, you might call it, and opportunity to be able to be on PBS, to be able to get these things out worldwide. We talked about how they can sponsor. You guys, I assume, are continuing to find ways to invest and build these projects and create more opportunity. Not just in Arab countries, but all over. I'm going to assume is the goal, as you said, that we want to really focus on this trauma healing. We'll let people know how to do that in the show notes.
I'd like to tell you where the Women's Trauma Healing Program project stands at the moment.
Yeah.
So we filmed the pilot, the very first episode, in February. And that was a lot of fun. We filmed it in Chicago. And we're going to do 3 more episodes later this month, and then try to do 3 episodes per month from then on until it's finished. But that's all dependent on funding. And so, we're deep in this project now, and we don't know, you know, which project God would have us do next. But this is, we're heavy into it, and it's a little overwhelming. And we would really appreciate people's prayers for the filming and the editing and everything for this series.
And for people who will listen to it all over the world.
Right.
Yeah, that the gospel would go out, that meeting their needs would help create an opportunity for the gospel to impact their hearts.
And it's such a useful thing. I wish that we could have gotten it out yesterday, you know, but it's going to be a busy year. Then we'll be praying about what's next.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today, telling us about all that you do. And I'm sitting here just kind of amazed and taking it honestly all in. There's so much that's going about. I mean, obviously, if you're doing 3 different series on the same topic, this topic is a wide, vast series. As we said earlier, with anything from successful ministers like Pastor Warren to baseball players who went through different various traumas, to children in war-torn countries, to women in war-torn countries, or just even countries where maybe they're seen as lesser than. Just as you said, we probably have people all around us going through various aspects of trauma, and maybe just befriending somebody, giving a listening ear.
Yes.
And could be the start of you engaging in the healing process and in the gospel process, and then also supporting this opportunity to get the message out through internet, TV, all the different various forms that it sounds like it's going through. Great opportunity. So guys who are listening, be sure to check it out. Be sure to click the links. We'll make them handy. That said, want to let you guys know about those other sponsors that help us out, like Andy McCollum at Resource One. Don't forget those guys. If you have any financial planning needs, it's 636-458-1798. You've seen several of the people from that organization on here. And if you haven't, go back and listen. We've had Danielle on here, left in China, 8 days old on a playground. Incredible young lady. We've had John on here talking about the meaning of significance and its importance and value. And obviously, we've had Andy here to talk about Rams football and all those other good things that God's doing in his life, like Fellowship of Christian Athletes. That said, also don't forget to check out Chris with CS Design at 573-436-3717. They do our intro, outro, and a lot of our website stuff. And lastly, Jeff Earhart with any of your insurance needs with State Farm at 314-821-5333 or Jeff. And if you call, you just might get my normal co-host, Scott, answering. And you can give him a hard time if you have some insurance needs. Hey, thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you guys next episode.